My name is Amy Wilkinson. I'm a White House fellow. My question is how you would define the key characteristics of effective leadership that allow you to go and be an advocate for good.
Trust. The longer I have been in public service and the more people have asked me about leadership over the years, leadership ultimately comes down to creating conditions of trust within an organization. Good leaders are people who are trusted by followers. Leaders take organizations past the level that the science of management says is possible. One of my sergeants back in the infantry school at Fort Benning almost 50 years ago, which is where I learned everything I ever got to learn about leadership, was at the infantry school. And he said to me one day, he said, "Lieutenant, you'll know you're a good leader when people follow you, if only out of curiosity." I've never had a better definition. Because what he was saying, and I've seen it experienced in my life so many times, what he was saying is they trust you. And you have built up that trust. How did you do it? Clear mission and statement, selfless service. People look to you and they trust you because you're serving selflessly as the leader, not self-serving, selflessly. And that you prepare the followers, you train them, you give them what they need to get the job done. Don't give them a job if you're not going to give them the resources, and that you're prepared to take the risks with them. And so they would teach us at the infantry school, no matter how cold it is, Lieutenant, you must never look cold. No matter how hungry you all are, Lieutenant, you must never appear hungry. No matter how terrified you are, Lieutenant, you must never look terrified. Because if you are scared, terrified, hungry, and cold, they will be scared, terrified, hungry, and cold. I've gotten away with that many, many times in the course of my career by being scared to death, cold, and wanting to go to sleep. But no, let's go. Let's keep going. Let's go around this corner, if only out of curiosity. And they'll follow you into the darkest night, down the deepest valley, up the highest hill, if they trust you. So the essence of leadership is about doing all that the science of management says you can with resources, but then taking it that extra step and giving it that spark. And that spark comes from getting people to trust you so that they will follow you, if only out of curiosity.
GlobalRecon.net, giving you the matter of facts. Welcome to the Global Recon Podcast. I'm your host, John Hendricks. For this week's podcast, I had two guests on, both Marine Corps veterans. Well, actually, one is active. The other is retired. John Brown is the president of the Recon and Sniper Foundation. He served with Reconnaissance Marines for a few years before retiring, and now he runs the Recon and Sniper Foundation, which does very good work assisting Marines from the reconnaissance community, from the Marine Scout Sniper community, from the MARSOC community, with struggles that they may be facing, helping with transition and several different facets that's important to Marine Corps veterans, and they do really good work. And the second guest who was on with us is Lieutenant Colonel Drew Ralston. And the Lieutenant Colonel is the 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion Commanding Officer. So, you know, he had some interesting things to say. And we spoke about leadership. The way that they connected was down where Lieutenant Colonel Ralston is based. There was some pretty heavy flooding, and a lot of Marines, including himself, had their houses damaged, and people were going through some really tough times, and they hooked up and, you know, rolled up their sleeves and got to work and really did some cool things for Marine Corps veterans and other veterans as well that lived in the area. So it was interesting stuff. And then obviously with the peaceful transition of power taking place, and Donald Trump is now officially the 45th president of the United States, there's been a lot of protest, a lot of opposition to some of his ideas. And at the same time, there's been a lot of support for the new president. So I think regardless of your beliefs, the next 4 years are going to be very interesting. And there's going to be a lot of changes in the world for the better or for the worse. So it's definitely going to be interesting. And it's kind of an exciting time to be involved and to be informed and to understand, you know, what is taking place. So, you know, I'd mentioned several times on previous podcasts that we were working to put together a team of veteran writers to gear up to release articles to the Global Recon website on a pretty consistent basis, covering topics from transnational terrorism, talking about the geopolitical scene, military history, veterans issues, tactical medicine. And so far, the team is coming together. I have a few people who are very smart, very experienced, and they're very eager to start getting this writing out and kind of give you guys a perspective and help keep people informed and that sort of thing. So it's very exciting. It would be a lot of work, but it's something that I look forward to doing. My friend Tim Kozak with the Veterans Project, my friends from Zulu Foxtrot and Zero Films Productions, Nate Boyer, a bunch of different people, Miley Cardenas, were out in Utah at the Sundance Film Festival, and they had an event hosted by Reminder Nation. And they were showcasing, and we spoke about this on previous episodes, they were showcasing Tim from the Veterans Project's work, some of his artwork, some of his portraits. It's very good stuff. Zero Films Productions, they have been doing some awesome documentaries on Vietnam veterans, and now they're doing some other stuff, and it's really cool stuff, and it's really cool to see. And, you know, with that being said, now I will play the conversation that I had with John Brown, the president of the Recon and Sniper Foundation, and Lieutenant Colonel Ralston, the 3rd Force Reconnaissance Battalion's commanding officer. Hey, what's up, guys? On for this week's podcast, we have a special episode with some special guests. We have two guests on for this week's episode. The first guest is John Brown, and John is the president of the Recon and Sniper Foundation, and he served with 3rd Recon Battalion, 4th Recon Marine. And our second guest is Lieutenant Drew Ralston, and he is the 3rd Force Reconnaissance Commanding Officer. Guys, how's it going?
Doing well. Thank you very much for having us on the show.
Yeah, doing great, John. Thanks for having us on.
No, thank you guys for coming on. I know, you know, you guys have a lot going on. John, SHOT Show just passed, and I know you guys were busy out there. How was that?
SHOT Show was amazing. So, you know, the Recon and Sniper Foundation, a couple of us went out to Las Vegas 2 years ago during SHOT Show, and just being around like-minded Americans and our fellow veterans, we decided that that would be a great venue to have a fundraising party. So over the last year, we've been planning and preparing and made that happen last Wednesday night during SHOT Show. We had a great time. We were expecting like 100 to 150 people, and we had upwards of 400 people.
Oh, wow.
We raised a ton of money. We met a lot of great people, and I think we solidified ourselves for SHOT Show for future fundraisers, but also let people know, you know, that we're legit, we operate in a good way, and you know, we're here to stay. And that there's another group out there that's doing good stuff to help veterans. So ultimately, it was a major success for the foundation.
That's awesome. And so, and you and Drew hooked up working with your foundation as well, and we'll get into that in a second. Before we get into that, can you just explain, you know, what the foundation is about and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. So Recon and Sniper Foundation is made up mostly of former reconnaissance Marines like myself and Marine snipers. We have, you know, there's private social media networks out there, Facebook and Twitter and other stuff. And we have a private Facebook network of former Recon Marines, Recon Corpsmen, snipers and MARSOC operators. And over the last few years, as things within our communities would pop up where there was a need, where someone was having an issue with drugs and alcohol, or we lost somebody, or suicidal, or whatever the emergency was, we would collectively come together and address the need. And out of one of those private groups, we decided to make it a formal effort and create the Recon and Sniper Foundation, an actual 501c3 nonprofit, and then begin providing assistance to veterans in need. So again, we're former Recon Marines and snipers. Our title sometimes throws people off as to who we help, but if you are an honorably discharged veteran, if you served our country honorably and you're now in a position where you need assistance, whether you served in World War II or you just got out yesterday, you're eligible for our assistance. Unfortunately, we're, you know, as you guys probably know, we're losing upwards of 20, 22 veterans a day to suicide, which means mathematically we're losing more American veterans in a year to suicide than we did collectively in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 14 years. So we've got a major situation, and I think we have an obligation, those that, you know, those of us who subscribe to the Brotherhood and want to do something about this, not just to take care of fellow Recon Marines and snipers, but the entire veteran community that is unfortunately being neglected. So that's who we are, and that's, in a broad spectrum, that's our mission.
Right, and you know, it's obviously a big problem that the veteran community is facing, and top of the issues that you deal with coming back from war. I feel like from a lot of conversations that I've had with different veterans from different branches on the subject, a lot of them felt like a majority of the issues came from the separation from the military. And some people also felt like perhaps, you know, they were prepared to do their jobs in combat, and perhaps there wasn't a big enough effort to help prepare them to return to, you know, society as a civilian. And that's where some of the issues kind of arise. And I'm not sure if you guys feel that way or have dealt with some of that.
In fact, that's the majority of the cases we see where, you know, PTSD and other combat related injuries are a major issue. But the majority of the emergency situations we see are stemming from people just getting tripped up in life. And as you alluded to in regards to a lack of proper preparation for when men and women get out of the military, you know, I'll speak for myself. I went into the Marine Corps for a lot of reasons, but one of them was because I wasn't ready for the next step in life. And I think a lot of other men and women are in a similar position. There's patriotism, there's family heritage, there's all these different reasons. But for me, and I know others, because I wasn't ready for college, I wasn't ready for the next step, and I needed to mature and kind of get straight, that motivated me to go in the Marine Corps. And so you get out, and yeah, you can jump out of an airplane at 28,000 feet, or you can shoot a bad guy from a mile away, or rewire a Harrier. But if you don't know a proper interest rate for a car loan, or how to balance your checkbook, or how to navigate the VA or the GI Bill, it's real easy to get tripped up in life. And then when you add some of the stuff that men and women come home with, PTSD or other mental or physical injuries from their service, it just makes it even worse. And then you've got the issues with the VA and the medications that are being prescribed. You have, you know, there's a check to your ego. I mean, you go into the service and you work your way up the ranks and you become important. You're doing some very important work, regardless of your MOS in the military. You're making life and death decisions. 99% of the jobs out there are very, very critical in the military. And when you get out, you basically start life back over, and you're back in a classroom or a work environment with 18 and 19 year old kids who haven't done or seen a tenth of what you have. And you're now equal to them. And I think subconsciously that's a kick in the ego, which also contributes to, when times get tough, you know, why is this happening to me? You know, I've done all this stuff for my country. And, you know, so there's many contributing factors, but again, I think it's, for the most, what I've seen, it's life happens. And Men and women, unfortunately, don't have access or the knowledge to the resources to prevent themselves from getting into the position or from digging out of the hole that they might find themselves in. So that's where we come in. You know, right now we're providing mostly reactionary assistance. So we find out about someone who has a need and then we react. Whereas our long-term goals are to provide more preemptive assistance so that men and women who have served can be brought into a network of, again, like-minded Americans and their fellow veterans so that before they go, they move to Texas and try to get an engineering degree and get the VA bill or GI bill and navigate the VA, we can connect them with somebody who's gone that same route and help them so they don't have to make the same mistakes others have made and then build off that network. So we can, again, provide preemptive assistance so that men and women don't ever get into the situation to need assistance in the first place. That's is a very complex issue, but definitely we have learned a lot about the many factors that are unfortunately hurting the veteran community right now.
Right, and it's extremely complex, and after several years of the country as a whole trying to figure out the best way to deal with this issue, I think, well, one, obviously it hasn't been figured out yet, and then, but I also do think that with the war is going on for this long and so many veterans coming home and you know, getting out of the military and experiencing combat or, experiencing different experiences overseas in a conflict zone, I think awareness is pretty high now. And I think people are really making an effort to try and figure this out. And I think we could potentially be closer to figuring it out than we ever were before.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely as a country have learned a lot. I mean, for instance, the term PTSD has been called many things over the years, shell shock and other stuff. But you're right. We are learning as a nation more about it. But I also think that one of the things that prevents non-veterans from assisting is just they don't know or understand what the issues are. And they don't want to approach people. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people think that PTSD is 99% of why people are committing suicide. And that, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but that hasn't been anywhere close to my experience working with the foundation. It's more, it's definitely a factor in many different people, but it's life tripping people up and a snowball effect getting bad real quick because they don't have the skills or connections to take the necessary steps in life after they get out. And teaching the civilian world, introducing them to the veteran community, explaining to people what's going on, and most importantly, how they can help if they want to, is crucial in tackling the issues and making sure that we provide veterans with the health care and assistance and everything that they deserve. Because ultimately, none of this is possible. None of this American dream is possible if they don't do what they do and what they've done. And obviously, they're being neglected, and it's unsat, and we've got to do something about it. So a lot to improve on, for sure.
Right. So, Drew, you and John, you guys kind of hooked up in a sort of a unique circumstance. Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So, as a reserve commander, my unit is over in Mobile, Alabama, but I live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where back in August of last year, we suffered some pretty horrific flooding, worst flooding on record in this area. And within about 48 hours or so, a group of gentlemen from the Recon and Sniper Foundation had, through our network of brothers, found out that there were some other reconnaissance Marines who were sideways as a result of the flooding, and they mobilized and got guys down here to help with getting myself and a number of other Marines back on our feet you know, as quickly as could be. And, you know, once we got guys back on their feet, then we started looking for other Marines who were in need. And there's another reserve unit right here in Baton Rouge, and there's some folks from that unit who were affected by the flood, and we went out and did some work, you know, to get them right. And then we continued to look and found some folks a little bit further to the west out in Lafayette that needed some help. And we kept digging and found some retired Marines who needed help getting back on their feet, you know, including a sergeant major who had retired out of 8th Tanks, gentleman who was a Korean War vet, was at the damn Chosin Reservoir with Chesty Puller, and about the most resilient man you would ever meet. We just, you know, one of the Marines from the RNS Foundation found him out at a restaurant on a Sunday morning and just went up to him and, you know, asked him, hey, were you, you know, you a Marine? Pretty obvious because the guy was wearing a, you know, sateen Korean War era 8-point cover. But sure enough, yeah, you know, Marine who was – his house was decimated by the flood. And, you know, together we did a lot of work to try and help get him back on his feet. As much as we actually went out and bought him – a replacement truck because he had lost his vehicle in the flood. You know, and then we just kept looking for people that had issues and needed help and started branching out outside of the, you know, obviously outside of the reconnaissance community already, even outside of the Marine Corps, and, you know, really started doing some work also helping out some of our local first responders, you know, our police officers, our firemen, because those guys, after this event, they didn't have the opportunity to go home and start doing any type of recovery work. You know, they were out on the street doing their job. So we, you know, we did a lot of work with the first responders and trying to help them, you know, get right. And I tell you, absolutely rewarding experience having the opportunity to work with the, you know, with this group of former reconnaissance Marines and snipers, doing all of this. And I tell you, one of the most rewarding moments for me in the whole thing was we had found one of my former Marines, his parents' house was just absolutely, decimated, and we spent, I want to say it was about 3 days on their house alone, pulling up hardwood floors, ripping out drywall. I mean, we basically took everything out of the house. And you know, what really hit me was at some point I heard this Marine, Larry, his mother said to her husband, she just kind of looked at him and goes, you know, baby, it's going to be okay. The Marines are here. And, you know, it was one of those moments where it was almost like something you would see in a movie, but I stood there and I was like, did I just hear that? And it really, you know, it's that moment that it really hit home, the effect that, you know, this brotherhood that we have can have on people, and the work that, you know, was done was just it hard to really describe. The coming together and the selflessness that was demonstrated by everybody who came in here and you know, really kind of put aside their lives to make a difference for folks that they didn't know before this happened in any way, shape, or form.
Right. And that's pretty awesome. And, you know, I think it's a testament to the character of, you know, men and women who serve in the United States Marine Corps, and then specifically, the guys who are in your kind of, area of the Marine Corps. And Drew, how long were you in the Marine Corps?
So I have been in since 1992. I had a little bit of broken time when I came up with a brilliant idea to come off of active duty and go to law school. And I practiced law in Baton Rouge for a couple years before deciding that that really wasn't for me. And went back into the Marine Corps Reserves and have had the I've been blessed to spend a lot of my time as a reservist back on active duty orders and doing some meaningful work as well. So it's been an interesting career, which has gone through a couple of different iterations from reserve duty to active duty to a break to, you know, back in and off of active duty as a reservist.
That's awesome. So, you know, with the speed of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, the way things were done in the military, things had to change and kind of adapt to the new kind of war that is being fought now. And, you know, obviously for the audience, I'm sure a lot of the audience is familiar with reconnaissance Marines, you know, Marine Scout Snipers, MARSOC Marines. Can we talk just a little bit about, because in order to become a reconnaissance Marine, you'd have to go through a selection process. Can we talk about some of that for maybe any of the younger members of the audience who would be interested in potentially joining the reconnaissance Marine ranks?
I think Lieutenant Colonel Ralston and I maybe could tag team that one, if that's okay with you, sir.
Absolutely.
I was over in Okinawa, and I did go through a very unique process of how I got into the reconnaissance community. And I think the steps now are different. At the time that I went in, it wasn't the 0321 wasn't a primary MOS. 0321 is the reconnaissance Marine or reconnaissance man, MOS. And again, it was a secondary. I actually originally signed up for the infantry, and my entire infantry platoon was sent from California to Okinawa, despite there not being a permanent infantry unit there. So they gave us a few options. You could try out for recon, you could try out for the scout sniper platoon, or you could be an administrative person and then rotate back to the U.S. in a year. I was a better swimmer than I was a shooter, so I tried out for recon and went from there. Traditionally, you will have to, if you're in the Marine Corps and you want to go to a reconnaissance unit, the first step is to take an indoc. It's a mental and physical challenging event that weeds out people who would like to become a reconnaissance Marine. Very first step, you know, you do a physical fitness test. Then you go on to do ruck runs and swims, and other, again, physical and mental events for 24 to 48 hours, until it's complete. When I was in, it was, the indocs were always different. There was a few things that were, you know, the PFT and the swim times, and the ruck run distance was always pretty standard. But beyond that, it was kind of whatever that command wanted to do, to make sure you were the right person to go on to the next step. So after you pass the indoc, if you're again with another unit, you'll get orders to the reconnaissance unit that you want to join, and then begin a pre-recon school course. At the time I was in, it was called RIP, which is the Recon Indoctrination Program. And then once you go through RIP, the next step would be to go to the basic reconnaissance course or the amphibious reconnaissance school, which one's on the East Coast, one's on the West Coast. And then from there, you go on to follow on schools. But I'll let Drew talk about maybe some of the changes that are different now. And I know that now that 0321 is a primary MOS, men can go straight from boot camp to whatever school it is for their MOS, or they can go to boot camp, infantry school, and then to the reconnaissance school as a primary MOS. You can actually sign up for it if you meet the physical and mental requirements in boot camp. So, again, I'll let Drew speak to the differences now, but that was a path when I was in.
Yeah, and John, I'll tell you what, you pretty much hit the differences before you turned it over to me. And, you know, sure as anything, they'll continue to change and evolve, and there will be slight, you know, improvements or additions or subtractions as we go along. I think what I'd rather talk about is just a couple of the intangibles. And this you know, like you said, John, this is towards maybe some of the younger ones in the audience who may be thinking about it, and do they really have the wherewithal to become a reconnaissance Marine? And I'll tell you, you know, I think there's a couple simple intangibles. And number one is that you have to have the mental toughness that's required to endure some grueling tasks and some long nights alone and unafraid on the edge of the empire. You've got to be a very resilient individual who can take a punch, whether that is a punch, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, you name it. But you got to have the resilience to bounce back when things don't go your way, when an obstacle's thrown in front of you, and keep driving towards your objective, whatever that objective may be. And then, you know, you have to have the absolute unwavering desire to be one of the best. If you don't have that, then you're going to have a lot of long, long days at work. And then finally, you know, frankly, the ability to swim doesn't hurt, because we lose a whole lot of kids in the build process who just, they can't swim their way out of a wet paper bag with a rip start in it. So, you know, but 95% of it is mental, and it's the willingness to keep driving on when obstacles are thrown in front of you, and the desire to just absolutely persevere. You know, that's what it really takes, is that what's in your heart more so than anything else, I think.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting, because that kind of that mindset, that mental toughness and resilience, it can be applied, you know, anywhere in life. And I think, you know, for the audience, it's like, you know, if you want to be great at anything, you need to have that in your mind, you know, like whether it's starting up a company or accomplishing something that's physically tough. If people want to climb a mountain, right, you got to realize that it's, you know, it's one step at a time to get up, and there's only one way up the mountain. If you look at it like you look at the whole mountain and you get daunted by the task, and then you get put off, and then you don't want to do it, you'll never make it that way. And if you kind of take it one step at a time, one event at a time, you know, whether it be for a selection or for accomplishing your goals outside of the military, you know, you need to have that. I think that kind of applies in all areas of life, you know?
Yeah. And to, you know, piggyback on what you guys are saying, the mental aspect of things, when you said, climbing a mountain, when you go to climb that same mountain for the second time, it's easier because that mental unknown, those fears of the unknown, that's not there. You know what to anticipate, and you know that you can do it. But when you go into something for the first time, and if you're not mentally prepared for it, it can destroy you. And eventually you learn that, and I learned this when I was in a cadre position, when we would have our indocs in Okinawa, when people would come to try out to be in a recon Marine. And I'd see these guys that were huge, just machine gunners that, you know, looked like bodybuilders. And I'd see them quit, or some of them. And then I'd see a guy who... you know, to use Drew's analogy, couldn't fight their way out. It looked like they couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag. Smoke the indoc. You know, some nerdy looking skinny kid smokes the indoc, and this big machine gunner guy with big muscles sinks in the pool. So it's, you know, I learned that through situations like that in my own, that the mental aspect of what you're doing and having a positive mental attitude and success being your only option for an outcome makes or breaks like Drew said, 95% of the people are out there. It's a big part of everything we do. So, yeah, prepares you for life. That's for sure. For whatever next step you have.
Right. So Drew, would you be able to, you know, you've had a long career in the Marine Corps. Would you be able to share a story of an experience perhaps that stood out to you, maybe from a deployment or just something that stood out to you that the audience might have some value in?
Sure. I guess, you know, you're never really cease to be amazed at what Marines can do when they come together and work towards an objective. And I'll tell you that, you know, my last deployment was in 2014 until, you know, early 2015. We went and did some theater security cooperation work in the Kingdom of Jordan. And I went over there with a very small team. It was about 18 to 20 Marines and sailors. And we were supposed to be just teaching the Jordanian security forces procedures. You know, their real role in Afghanistan had been to guard the gates at varying different places, whether it was the international airport up in Kabul, or, you know, some of the Jordanians were providing, gate guard duties down at Camp Leatherneck in Helmand province. And shortly after we started this deployment, my team of 18 grew into a team of about, several hundred, as we managed to get rolled up into the special purpose MAGTAF that was in Kuwait at the time. And we were basically spread out all over the Middle East between a number of different places. I was blessed to have, in addition to myself, a handful of reconnaissance Marines that made really the backbone of the team. But I had Marines of all different MOSs, from, 18 guys from about 14 different units who had come together and formed, in a very short time frame before deploying. And then, you know, after getting in country, had missions completely change on us about as far as they possibly could. And this is one of those instances where you saw the resiliency, you saw the resourcefulness of Marines and how really, they can adapt, they can overcome obstacles, to use a little bit of Gunny Highway there. But it's something that never ceases to amaze when you see it put into action, and the ability of a bunch of young men to seamlessly pull off what would, at first blush seem to be damn near impossible. And, sure, they gripe and they complain about it, but at the end of the day, they always seem to be able to accomplish the mission. I guess that is the thing that really does help set us apart from everybody else, is that, it's mission first always. And we always seem to be able to, drive the ball over the fence when we need to. So, yes. Like I said, that was a recent, experience that just kind of, it stands out in my mind as what Marines can do when you give them the opportunity and challenge them.
And were you working as a commanding officer at the time of this rotation?
Yeah. I mean, I was the debt commander over there. And so I was one of four lieutenant colonel commands that made up the special purpose MAGTAF.
Okay, cool. So, you know, as a commanding officer, in a unit like the Reconnaissance Marines, you know, one thing that I've seen from different veterans who have got out of the service, whether they'd been, you know, some sort of infantry or special operations guys, is people seem outside of the military, like perhaps, you know, like Fortune 500 companies or you know, companies that are trying to like develop cohesion within their team and that sort of thing, they hire veterans to come in and kind of talk about leadership and team building and that sort of thing. For the audience and for any, you know, potential men and women who are looking to join the military and become officers and leaders, do you have like any advice or any resources, like any reading resources maybe they can check out to kind of help them and understand a little more in the leadership realm?
Well, let's see. I tell you what, I give you one book, and my boss is going to be happy that I mentioned this because I just finished reading it. And it was kind of his book before he turned it over to me. But there's a book by a guy named James Kerr, who follows the New Zealand All Blacks rugby club and their secrets their secrets to leadership and winning. And I'll tell you, it is remarkably similar to what we try to instill in leaders in the Marine Corps. It really truly is a good read. And it gives you some insight into the fact that the things that we do in the military, and I think in the Marine Corps in specific, although it doesn't really, attribute anything to the United States Marine Corps, but you, as you read it, you can see the parallels and how those our tenets of leadership really can help lead to success in other areas that seem to be very unconnected. So it's a book called Legacy by James Kerr.
Okay, cool. So anyone listening, check that out. Obviously, Drew has a lot of experience in his time in the Marine Corps. And Drew, before we get out of here, how would you define good leadership?
Wow. That's one of those tough questions. How to define good leadership. I mean, I think that a good leader is one who is able to balance balance mission accomplishment with ensuring that they're taking care of their Marines, you have to do both because it's really a cyclic process where if you take care of your Marines, then they will inevitably be more invested in ensuring that the mission gets accomplished. Accomplishing the mission is in fact taking care of them. You have to find the right balance of those two things and realize that sometimes, taking care of your Marines is term we used to use is tough love. Sometimes you have to tell them things that they don't want to hear. Sometimes you have to tell them when they're not meeting the mark and be very frank with them, because you need to be able to give them that insight to the fact that, hey, look, brother, you're not meeting the mark. This is what you're doing wrong. And not just, let them know that there may be some place where they're falling short, but also what they need to do in order to improve. And that's, that's a tough thing to do, is to be able to look another man straight in the eye and be like, you're not getting it done. You need to improve, and here's what you need to do to get better. There's a lot of us that just, they don't have the guts to be able to do that. But, you know, I think that's one of those things that a true leader who cares about, you know, who cares about winning and cares about taking care of their men, needs to be able to do. And I'll tell you, it gets harder and harder, for a lot of our young men to do as we get into this more and more disconnected, you know, electronics heavy social media age, where people just, they've lost the ability to sit down and, you know, and talk to one another. And that has all kinds of ripple effects in other areas as well. But, you know, that, I guess that was kind of a little bit long-winded answer. I'm not sure if I laid it out well or not, but I think it's a tough, you know, no, it's good leadership's a tough thing to define, because there's a lot of different ways to do it well, and there is no set right answer, if you will.
Right, right, and I think you did a good job, and you know, I just hope that the, you know, young men and women who are looking to join the military and whatever service it is, whether it be Marine Corps, you know, Air Force, Army, Navy, you know, they can take away some value from it. And, you know, I just want to thank you for your continued service, and thank you for everything you've done for this country. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm truly blessed to be able to continue to serve, and, you know, happy to, that I will continue to do it as long as it remains, fun for me.
All right, cool, brother. It was great talking to you. And like I said, you know, I appreciate you taking out the time and coming on here.
Yep, absolutely.
Leadership, you know, it's something that I find that's to be extremely important, and something that, you know, as humans, we should always, you know, try and seek new understanding and look at ourselves truly and not with any misconceptions, and be able to, you know, offer some constructive criticism, you know, to ourselves and to others, and in an effort to become better people. And, you know, with the way things have kind of turned out in the last, I don't know, maybe 25 years or so, for younger generations of Americans who are coming up, you know, you watch television and, or you see all these kind of ads and certain things that are put in your face that are really useless, and they really don't do any kind of good or services to people who are trying to become adults and effective people. And, you know, hopefully something like that can change, you know, instead of watching commercials, you know, trying to sell you something all the time. You know, how about we watch commercials that can teach you lessons, you know, life lessons and things that would be valuable to children, and you know, that kind of thing. Maybe that's a little radical for today's world and today's generations, but you know, it's just something that I find would be a huge benefit to the country for our sustainment and future leadership and that sort of thing. So, you know, I enjoyed having them on. They both do great work. They are Americans who put people ahead of them. They work towards, you know, a greater purpose. They sacrifice and spend a lot of time helping people. And it's really something that I find inspiring. And I hope that you guys can as well. With that being said, I would like to close out this episode. As always, I encourage you to subscribe, download, share the episodes with your friends and family on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Tumblr, LinkedIn if you have it. My website is globalrecon.net. My Instagram account is IGRecon. We have a second account called Black Ops Matter. There's a third account which I help manage and post on from time to time. It's owned and ran by my friend Chantel Taylor. It's called Mission_Critical. Check it out. I'm also on Twitter at IG Recon. I'm on LinkedIn. Just search Global Recon. We have some interesting episodes planned out for you guys over the next couple of weeks. Some really good guests will be on, and you'll hear some cool stories and hear some things and hopefully learn some things. So with that being said, we'll see you guys in a couple of days with another episode. Peace.